Welcome back to Our Blue Bahamas. Today, we have a special guest, Ms. Lindy Shikari from Friends of the Environment. Thank you so much for having us. We're back on Our Blue Bahamas. So, Ms. Curry, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Jasmine. Thank you for inviting us to tell you a little bit about us and the work we do here at Friends. So my name is Lindy Shikari. I'm the Deputy Director here at Friends of the Environment. I've been working with Friends since 2019 and have kind of moved up in the ranks from education officer to the role I have today. I am from Abaco, born and raised, and so very happy to be a part of an organization that is focused on the Abaco environment.
So, Friends of the Environment, for our listeners who may not be familiar with it, give us a little background about what is Friends of the Environment.
So, Friends of the Environment is a local environmental nonprofit here in Abaco. We were established in 1988. Our mission is preserving the environment of Abaco, the Bahamas, through education, conservation, and research facilitation. So what that looks like is going into local schools, providing presentations and field trips about everything about Abaco's ecosystems, engaging with our communities, making sure they are aware of environmental issues, and trying to help them to become more informed so that they can be a part of the decision-making process. So everything about Abaco's environment and how we can take care of it.
I love the way how you said we're connecting the environment to the way of life. A lot at Brief, we find in our program, a lot of persons have had the disconnect between the environment and what it truly means to be a Bahamian. So for someone who have never visited Abaco before, how would you describe the connection between the community and the natural environment?
So I think it's almost intrinsic here. In Abaco, the connection between the community and the natural environment is incredibly strong. Our islands, just like the rest of those in the Bahamas, are shaped by the ocean, our forests, and all the different ecosystems we have here. Many of us grew up fishing, boating, exploring. That's how we spent our days, and hopefully the youth of Abaco continue to do that. It's not just a space for us to think about like a documentary, but it's a part of our everyday lives. For a lot of people, it's not just a part of our culture, it's our livelihoods. Simply put, just our way of life.
So I heard you said you hope that it continues for the previous generations. So is there a connection with the previous generation to the younger generation when it comes to the livelihood of like persons being in the environment, or you think it's a little bit different?
It's definitely different now than it was when we were kids, and even older generations of Bahamians. We are in that age of technology where so many screens, so many of us are tapped into our phones that we're passing the forest and not even recognizing it's outside of the windows. And sometimes it's taking that step back and making sure that we put real effort into having ourselves out in nature, having our kids out in nature. So definitely there's a difference, but it's all there around us. It's just us needing to immerse ourselves in it.
So I want to zoom in a little bit more personally into you. So what was there like a moment early in your life when you realized how important nature or the environmental education was? Like, tell us your journey on how you started.
So, like I said, like most Abaconians, nature was just an everyday part of my life from very young. I was an adventurer. I loved the outdoors. I loved the ocean. I was definitely daring. I would want to be the first one out in the ocean. But I would say in terms of like environmental education and making those connections for things are going on that are damaging our environment and we need to play our part, I would say it kind of started as me trying to avoid PE class. So I went to a school where PE was optional when you got into 11th grade. And so instead of taking PE, I took marine biology at Forest Heights with Jim Richard and was introduced to environments I knew in a different way and made aware of threats that I never really made the connection of before, seeing it and then actually getting involved with Friends of the Environment, being a part of mangrove restoration. And that's when my eyes were really open to one, we need to do our part as a community. And two, there's a livelihood in this. Like, it could be my job to do something I'm passionate about.
So what I thought was so interesting was you saying that you had an option to actually take marine biology at school. You know, a lot of persons, we find, especially with brief, we have a lot of experiential programs where we would teach students, but sometimes we find that there's a barrier for students getting into the marine ecosystem and actually learning about it. So I'm just hearing like there's almost like there's a different culture that's in Abaco that a lot of Bahamians don't get to see. And so I want you to know, I want you to tell me, how have you seen the impact of the environmental work in bringing people together in Abaco? And just talk about how bringing the community is important.
So, how has our environmental work played a part in bringing community together? So, I'm sure everyone knows that Abaco would have been impacted by Hurricane Dorian in 2019, and it was a real eye-opener for the importance of our ecosystems. Mangroves were destroyed, coral reefs had household appliances on them, pine forests were totally decimated in some areas. And I think for many Bahamians, many Abaconians right here, as we, all of the things that the loss we experience, the devastation of something that is a part of your everyday drive to work, it really took a toll. So I think one of the big things is you recognize the importance after you've lost something, right? Everybody celebrated seeing green. We knew when the first trees had flowers after Dorian, when baby pine trees are popping up along the highway. And so, through our work, we've been making persons as partners in the Northern Bahamas Mangrove Restoration Project, for example. We've been making people aware of the importance the mangroves have, the role they played in protecting our land, our homes, the role they play in livelihoods for so many fishermen. And now we see the community come together to be a part of something bigger than themselves. They're excited to say they know what mangroves are now. Older adults tell us stories about how when they were growing up, like mangroves were smelly and they called them the swamps, but now they know they protect the land. And there's some gratifying feeling in planting a mangrove. It's something about knowing that you, like I said, are being a part of something much bigger than yourself that will last for generations and working together, old and young. So I think that's a great example of how environmental work brings community together, helps the sharing of stories, traditions, and just providing the general awareness for those persons who can't go out and be a part of those experiences. Their kids go home and tell them they did this amazing thing. And the passion is shared that way.
What I didn't like about Hurricane Dorian, a lot of persons didn't know that such a thing as climate change and how that's impacting our ocean, but and how it impacts our livelihoods, especially with the increase of storms. But I think after Dorian, the response of the community was so wholesome, and actually seeing, like you say, planting a mangrove, being a part of the recovery efforts. And so, as a local NGO, do you think environmental organizations sometimes underestimate the social side of conservation?
So I definitely think it depends on the NGO. I think sometimes we have to think about what their priorities are. What are the pillars of their organization? You have some organizations that are more geared at research, and I think that yes, sometimes the science and the research can for not forget, but not pay as much homage to the importance of the social aspects. But I think we're shifting away from that. Science is now recognizing the importance in traditional ecological knowledge, like going to the fissure to find out which spots are important, where the changes are happening. So I think we're having a major shift from the science of old to what's happening now. And then for friends of the environment in particular, I love to remind people that the work we do, yes, it's all about protecting the environment, but who are we protecting it for? We're protecting it for ourselves, for future generations. We want to empower others to be a friend of the environment. You know, we want you to be aware, to know the things that matter, so that when the conversation comes to you on what you want, you can make a fully informed decision on, do you want to put X in Y place, or would it be better somewhere else?
Exactly. So it's also like that knowledge shifting and also that communications. And a lot of persons believe that you have to have a degree or enable to be a part of the environment to be an environmental steward. But citizen science is something that's really, really growing nowadays, and that anybody can be a part. And we all play a part in maintaining our environment. So tell us a little bit of like some of the hands-on experience that students and other persons in the community get to do through your organization.
So just feeding off of what you said, I think we should all recognize that we're all scientists, you know? We're all in our daily lives experimenting, trying to figure out what works best. What should I do? What should I not do? Where should I go for certain things? And through Friends of the Environment, what are we doing? What are those hands-on experiences? We definitely have a major focus on youth from the ages of 3 to 17, so our school age students. We go into the classroom and we teach them about all the different ecosystems. If we're teaching about rocky shores, a hands-on experience could look like a touch tank. And then kids are holding a sea urchin that they were taught to fear and seeing it's a living animal. And sometimes we're hurting it more than it's hurting us. We also provide experiences, immersive experiences, where we take kids into the blue holes for the first time, exploring the pine forest and seeing an Atala hare streak, or learning about the Abaco pardon and in the environment that it lives in, jumping into the blue hole or snorkeling on a coral reef, something that because of others' experiences or things that we've never done before, we may have a little fear about, we may be apprehensive, but after we've done it, a whole new world opens up for us. So we definitely do a lot of that. And then with our adults, we encourage them to come on our campus to learn more. We have the Exploratorium, which is this space open to all, where you can learn about all of Abaco's ecosystems and have interactive experiences with signage on the wall. We have Ducky, who is a false killer whale. His skeleton hangs in our lobby. We have a real, not real cave that you can step into and see what it would be like to go spelunking, seeing stalactites and stalagmites, and watching footage from Brian K. Cook, a cave diver here in Abaco. So lots of different.
Sorry, I have to stop you right there. Spelunking. You got to tell us what that is.
So, spelunking is a fun word, it just means cave exploring. So, if you have ever walked in the caves in Nassau or Eleuthera, you've been spelunking.
Okay, wonderful. So spelunking. And for persons, let's say if they were visiting Abaco or there's an Abaconian listening into this. So, when can we visit the explore?
The
Help me.
Exploratorium is open.
Exploratorium. So is do we have to book, or we can just show up and be able to see some of these amazing things?
So you just have to show up between Monday and Friday. The hour is 9 to 4, and we are more than happy to provide you a tour of our entire campus, including the exploratorium, and it is all free of charge.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I can imagine, so your campus is a place where people take field trips as well.
Yeah, so our campus is definitely a demonstration site. So aside from that wonderful natural history exhibit that is the exploratorium, we also have where our building, our campus is ran fully on solar. And so we want people to see that renewable energy does work here in the Bahamas. And we are a very large campus. So if we can get it to work here, then it can be replicated. And so that's one of the things that's on available to tour. And then we also have our rainwater catchment. So we have lots of redundancies in place. And thanks to lots of different organizations in Hurricane Dorian, our initial building, the Education Center, was destroyed. And we've had the opportunity to build back bigger and better. And we would have used integrated concrete forms, which has a monolithic pour. So it's supposed to be a much stronger building. So just learning all the ways to build smart and with climate resilience in mind.
Right. And I love how much thought has went into like the actual building is a conversation on how we could be more sustainable, on how we could be more hurricane resilient. And I think like these adaptive features are super, super important. And I don't know. Well, I'm going to ask you this. So, do you think it's a difference between students work learning within the traditional format or actually getting to see these things being immersive or explain? I know as I work in education, we offer presentations as well. We do go into classrooms, we try to keep it interactive. Sometimes we bring a kunk in the classroom and some interesting stuff. But tell me how has it been your experience with having these type of immersive educational modules?
So, just answering your question, I think both types of learning matter. When it's a very large group, if you have 100 people, maybe that day you can't go swimming on the coral reef. And like you said, we have to get crafty in a classroom with a presentation and some demonstration items like a live conch or coral that would have washed ashore and is no longer alive. But I do think that there is real value in having those immersive experiences. Sometimes it's hard to make the connection with the information you see on a screen if you've never experienced it. And as a Bahamian, it is a personal desire for every Bahamian to be able to appreciate our environment, right? We sell ourselves on the beauty of this place we call home. And we market it as the place to go
Feeling to be
snorkeling
a
or
part
part of an organization where we are offering those first-time opportunities, kids who learn about coral reefs, and it's a 5-minute swim away from shore, and they live around the corner and they've never seen a coral reef in real life. And so I think there is like a great value in offering those immersive experiences, like bridging the gaps, dispelling the fear. I think it's a really tough situation to be in to not know how to swim in a place surrounded by water or having a fear of the ocean when it's so important to our lives. And so being able to help those students have those experiences and just seeing how they grow through those experiences is amazing. One day
So,
being afraid of the blue hole, and the next day they're telling others to jump in.
right. Can you share with us a success story of something that you've seen this time? I know a lot of time, I don't know if you can relate with me on this, but when I'm taking especially younger kids out snorkeling, a lot of them hold They hold my hand. I don't know. And at one point of time within the whole experience, they feel so empowered to explore on their own that they just let go. And I think that let go moment, their world just becomes a little bigger, and they feel a little bit more confident, and like you say, dispel some of that the fear surrounding the ocean. So share with us one of your success stories that you've seen.
So I will say Friends has lots of success stories. We right here in Abaco, we've provided over 30,000 educational experiences, and lots of them being hands-on, immersive, and interactive. We've had students go through our programs from Sea Beans, those are our 3-year-olds, straight up to leading Sea Beans. We have persons who would have been in our summer camps who now work with us. I myself, I am a story to tell. So I started in grade 8. We did a mangrove restoration, and now I'm here leading some mangrove restoration activities. But one of the most powerful moments for me has been I had a student who was, I'm pretty sure if it wasn't a phobia, it was pretty close to it. And she would get in the water, and the minute her feet didn't touch the bottom, it would be hyperventilating. Miss Lindisha, I can't do this. And we talk her through it. One day we made it out to the reef, and we went through the regular, Miss Lindisha, I can't do this. I don't know. And when we got back to shore, she had actually explored the reef. She was like, Miss Lindisha, I am so proud of myself. I overcame a fear, and I'm excited to be able to get in the water and do it again next time. And it was just, like I said, a really hard warming moment because she went from total fear, didn't want to do it. And even with all of that anxiety around it, she had this personal growth of knowing she could trust in herself. She could trust in us or me to help her to have this safe and fun experience, and then not to just tick it off the list and say, okay, well, I've done that. No, I want to go back. And so to me, that was like a really full circle moment.
I think it's so important that, their first experiences, or even, being paired with persons who know what they're doing, and, who can actually, I think when it comes to like when I'm speaking, a lot of persons to a lot of groups who are still like fearful, I'm like, they're like, if she can do it, maybe, perhaps, I don't know, I can give it a try. And I think it's so super important, the work that you're doing. So has there been any challenges on this journey of being a part of Friends of the Environment? Could you share some of those?
I think some of the greatest challenges are making connections with older persons with preconceived beliefs about certain things. I call the tree hugger often, and I'm like, I love trees, but I spend most of my time in the ocean, and I don't know if I've ever really hugged a tree. But it's just what, like I said, it's always that circle back to like letting them know, like the big, aside from loving the outdoors, the big push for me and why I do my job is because, one, I want it to be there for future generations. I want young Bahamians to have the experience I was growing up having. And so that is a big thing for me. Other challenges would be, I think some of the major challenges in our work is like funding, transportation, reaching those harder to reach communities who need the information because they really do rely on our natural resources. But sometimes it's difficult getting there, and it's making, and as we know in the business, it's all about making the connections, networking, finding your way, finding your avenues, finding the funding, finding your community leaders who are trusted, and if you're with them, then you're gonna be the community will be a little more open to trusting you. And so those are some of the barriers we definitely face.
And I can definitely agree with, reaching some communities are way harder than the next. And sometimes it takes a little, I don't say craftiness, but craftiness in how we craft a program in order to get more persons involved in our program. So I can definitely agree with you on that. And then also, so what gives you hope for the future of environmental stewardship in the Bahamas? What do you say to the young Bahamian listening right now?
So, what gives me hope? One, I look out my window and there's still foliage, there's still beautiful trees, beautiful oceans. So, we still have something to protect. Two, it's the reports from the parents after a presentation, a field trip, a summer camp saying, "My kid came home and told me we're not allowed to eat turtles." Or, "Mommy, you can't drop that there. We have to make sure to put it in the trash." It's hearing those voices that the message is being received and shared, right? I know that I can trust in the kids to absorb what we're telling them and want to carry it with them throughout their lives, because I don't think it just stops in the day that they had the experience, right? They had that immersive experience, they care a little bit more. Something about it resonates with them. I think one of the things I also want people to know is we don't expect everyone to be us. I don't expect everyone to become an environmental educator. Just want you to go forth with the information that we have something beautiful and fragile, and it's our job to protect it. And so to have the youth, our future environmental stewards already speaking up, that is a bright light for me.
I definitely agree with the stories. I think before we end, I'll share this one. So after our sea camp, like probably months after, you get the stories way after the actual program. So this kid was in the boat with his dad, and as he was putting in the conchs in his boat, the kid would look at the conch and then toss about, "Oh, this is a juvenile one." Or, oh, the lip isn't thick enough. So when he comes back, he's like, "Where's?" He's like, "No, Dad, because these are juvenile conch." And I think that's one of the most wonderful things with working with kids, with working with young adults. They really correct you. They don't matter who it doesn't
Zero
it does
filter.
it they will correct you. They'll put you in your place, and I think that is just so beautiful. So, okay, so just let me know how, for all of our listeners, we want to get more involved with Friends of the Environment. Where do we reach you? How to reach you?
How do you reach Friends of the Environment? Well, we are with the times. You can visit our website at friendsoftheenvironment.org. You can check out our socials, which we are on Facebook, Instagram, even TikTok. And if you want to reach out to me personally to find out about opportunities here at Friends, you can reach out at lcurry@friendsoftheenvironment.org.
Thank you so much, Lindisha. Thank you for the work that you're doing and for the reminder that the next generation of Bahamian conservationists are already capable, are growing, are ready to help take on that responsibility of the environment and actually find meaningful ways to have fun whilst also enjoying our natural environment. So until next time, protect your blue. I'm your host, Jasmine Colley. Thank you so much for listening in.